Thank you. Be seated.
Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Rocky Mountain versus Lubbock County.
May I please report? Mr. John Weaver will present argument to the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 6 minutes for rebuttal.
I'm going to try and give some time back to the court to be as brief as possible. First, I'd like to point out that the Court of Appeals erred in holding that Rocky Mountain Helicopter failed to preserve error by not objecting to the submission of the Deceptive Trade Practices Act question, which was question number three submitted to the jury. Rocky Mountain Helicopters was not required to object to that question in order to preserve its no evidence point. An objection to a jury question or an instruction or definition is usually required in a situation where there's something wrong with the form of the submission, or there's an omission, the definition's incorrect, something that requires correction prior to submission. Rocky Mountain Helicopters has made no complaint about the form of the Deceptive Trade Practices question itself. The definition, good workmanlike manner, is proper, under the law if a duty had arisen. Rocky Mountain Helicopters' complaint is that there is no evidence to support the question in this particular case under the facts of this case. And thus, Rocky Mountain Helicopters has presented a no-evidence point. It did so under the proper vehicles of a motion for judgment, notwithstanding the verdict of JNLV, and a motion of disregard.
Well, I'm a little confused. If you say there's no evidence to support an implied warranty, is that the same argument that one doesn't exist as a matter of law in the first place?
We're saying that under the facts of this particular case, no duty arose. And you can call it that it didn't arise as a matter of law, but you have to look at the facts of the case to decide whether it arose or not.
And if you say there's no evidence to support a jury finding of implied warranty, doesn't that assume the existence of an implied warranty in the first place? As opposed to, like a summary judgment said, we say you shouldn't even get to a trial on the issue of implied warranty because, as a matter of law, they don't exist in this kind of case, and here's the reason why.
I guess a probably more accurate way to put it would be to say that no evidence supports the submission of the issue to the jury.
Then wouldn't you have to object?
No. Objection would have been, it would have been proper. There could have been an objection. That is one way to preserve such a point, is to object at the jury charge stage. That's one of the ways to preserve the no evidence point, is to object to the submission, and there is no evidence to support the submission. It might be because there's a total lack of evidence, or it might be because there's no evidence presented in the case that would give rise to a legal duty. And we cited the court to the Houston Houston versus, my mind has gotten totally blank on it, but it's cited in our brief, where the court held that you did not have to object to the form of the question, you did not have to object at the jury charge stage in order to preserve a no-duty argument, that it was in essence a no-evidence point, and it could be raised after the rendition, after the jury came back with his verdict by way of a JNOB or a motion to disregard. And again, the rationale behind requiring the objection prior to the submission to the jury does not apply in this case. There was no correction that needed to be made to the question being submitted other than to disregard it, not submit it. And we can do that just as easily after it's submitted to the jury as we can before. It's just go ahead and we'll disregard it, and that's what we ask the court to do.
Well, aren't there other issues that were submitted under the DCPA question?
Yes, there were other issues as well as to misrepresentation.
And are there evidence?
There's no no evidence to support any of the planks. What we did is in our briefing to the Court of Appeals, we attacked each and every plank of it. And then the Court of Appeals came and they only looked to the implied warranty, and they held that there was an implied warranty and there was evidence of that. And that we've come to this court saying that the court erred in holding that there was an implied warranty. And in our briefing in the Court of Appeals that we have referred the court to, we have argued and we've shown that there was no evidence of any of the four elements of DTPA violations, or the four allegations of DTPA violations. They're really the three misrepresentations and then the breach of warranty. And the representations stem from post-transactional documents that they were generated after the transaction, after the contract was entered into, and it does not give rise to a DTPA violation.
Well, Mr. Weaver, now we don't have that Court of Appeals briefing, and you have not briefed to us whether or not the judgment is correct below based on the other alleged violations of the DTPA that were included in the broad form submission. Correct?
Well, the briefing has been supplied to the court. The clerk pointed out last week that I was to send copies of it since I was relying on that briefing.
So your position is that you're relying on that briefing in order, even though your petition for review makes no mention of reserving the issues or doing anything else in it, and you're relying on that and asking us to determine by looking at a combination of all this briefing that there is error in the judgment below to the extent it's based on a DTPA?
Yes, Your Honor. What we're saying is that in our petition for review, we focused on what the Court of Appeals did, and the Court of Appeals erred in finding that there was evidence of the implied warranty. And on the briefing on the merits, when it came time to that, we relied on our briefing below for that, and we have attacked each and every potential basis for supporting the DTPA issue. So once we get over the hurdle of whether there has been preservation of error, we get to the merits of the breach of the warranty claim, and we find that there is no implied warranty that arose in the evidence in this case. This court made clear that an implied warranty of good workmanlike manner with respect to services only arises as to the repair or modification of an existing good. The court made that clear in Parkway Company versus Woodruff. The Court of Appeals bypassed this restriction. Instead, the Court of Appeals read Melody Homes versus Barnes as permitting the creation of an implied warranty whenever public policy warrants it. And in this case, the Court of Appeals created a warranty based on its conclusion that the work performed here was inherently dangerous.
Before you go too far down that road, let me ask you a question. Well, let's assume that you are 100% right on that particular issue. Why wouldn't the jury's verdict nevertheless be affirmed because of the fact that there were other DTPA issues submitted in the same question?
Because there's no evidence to support any of the DTPA issues that were submitted. And that's what our briefing in the Court of Appeals shows. And really, the reason for all the focus on the good faith and fair dealing is that was the only thing that was really argued to the jury. That was the only thing that was that they really took seriously in their presenting the case to the jury. And that has really been a bone of contention throughout the case. The other issues, I think if the court reviews our briefing sees that they're really pretty quickly dismissed, and the only thing that was debatable was the implied warranty. The public policy exception that they've tried to create here is rather a broad one that threatens to swallow the rule itself. Any number of services pose a danger if not performed correctly. Commercial air service, surgery, residential natural gas services. But when there are other remedies that exist, such as a cause of action for negligence or a cause of action for gross negligence, there is no need to create a new implied warranty in all these cases. Moreover, as this court recognized in Parkway, a demonstrated need for an implied warranty is but one principle to be drawn from Dennis versus Allison and Melody Holmes. The court also looked at a second principle, a second prong or requirement, and in saying that warranty only extends to services provided to remedy defects existing at the time of the consumer transaction. And what we have here is the turning off or not of a pump. There is no defective good that's being modified or serviced. And they're talking about broad services and providing air ambulance care. It doesn't even involve the crash of the helicopter or anything. It's a very incidental thing. It doesn't really involve the directly the refueling of the aircraft. The refueling has been completed. It's just that the pump was not turned off. It's a very incidental matter that was not essential to the contract service, the services contracted for, and there is no need to come in and make a broad sweeping exception in this case. Our final point relates to the hospital's failure to present expert testimony on the breach and causation and how it is fatal to its case. The hospital will have this court believe that this case is as simple as someone leaving a garden hose turned on. But the Court of Appeals opinion, the hospital's theory at trial, and the evidence adduced at trial all really belie that. In trying to create an implied warranty in this case, the Court of Appeals stressed the expertise and specialized knowledge required of Rocky Mountain Helicopters. The hospital, in making their case before the jury, what they argued was that this mechanic that was hired by Rocky Mountain Helicopters that had 26 years of practical and teaching experience in helicopter maintenance and in refueling helicopters needed some particular training for refueling in this case because this was such a specialized, a difficult, complex thing to operate. And the evidence at trial concerned the custom in the industry regarding shutoff lights, the need for leak detectors, pumps running for weeks without problems, and the intricacies of O-rings and whether proper O-rings were used and the sealants in the O-rings. These are not matters that are within the knowledge of ordinary lay people. Not unlike the case of Hager versus Ramirez, the Fort Worth Court of Appeals case cited in our briefing, where expert testimony was required to prove negligence in prop dusting the wrong field. Expert testimony was required in this case to prove that Rocky Mountain Helicopters breached any duties that it had in this case. This issue relates to the implied warranty issue, but it also relates to the negligence issue as well, because they're basically saying they try to take the negligence issue and take the same facts and just call it implied warranty. Because there was no competent testimony that Rocky Mountain Helicopters' conduct fell below the standard of care, the jury issues on the DTPA and on the negligence must be disregarded. And I guess I lied. I didn't get time back to court. Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May I please report, Mr. Douglas Welch will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court, I'm Doug Welch. I'm here representing Lubbock County Hospital District that is doing business as University Medical Center. Would note that at the inception of this litigation, I believe that University Medical Center was then known as Lubbock General Hospital, but has since changed their DBA. The issue that I think I want to touch on first is, of course, the waiver issue. And I think Justice Baker had it absolutely right when he said, isn't this an issue that once we get to the point where we submitted it to the jury, that we've made an assumption that the warranty already exists? They had an opportunity at many stages of this litigation, starting with special exceptions to the pleadings. They could have moved for summary judgment, could have moved for directed verdict, could have objected to the submission of the warranty issue as an alternative under the DTPA issue. They did not.
Let me ask you this, though. His argument was, well, we can wait till after the verdict and file a motion for judgment NOV and assert there is no evidence to support a finding of implied warranty, even if you have assumed it when you submitted the issue to the jury. Now, that's correct, isn't it?
Well, I understand what his argument is, but I think we have to focus on which facts does the court need to look at to decide whether the warranty exists. And that's the question they're asking this court to decide. Look at their points number 2 and 3. Does the warranty exist? Is basically what they're asking this court to ask. The warranty arises as a matter of the relationships between the parties created by the contract. There's no dispute in this case that the contract existed.
Well, but a breach of contract or a breach of a contractual warranty doesn't give rise to a DTPA case, does it? This is an implied warranty, so it couldn't be in the contract.
Yes, but in the Schoenbeck case, this duty is implied in every contract. And I think that's what we have to focus on, is that the fact here is the contract exists, and implied within that relationship created by the contract is this duty that they will not be negligent in performing their duties under the contract. I don't think that fact was in dispute in this case, and I don't know that...
Well, if the facts aren't in dispute, and it presents then a question of law for the trial court to decide based on these undisputed facts whether this implied warranty in fact exists under Texas law, why does it matter whether or not there was an objection to a jury charge? Couldn't this have been raised by special exception with failure to state a claim, summary judgment, no cause of action under Texas law, motion to disregard jury findings afterwards because the jury findings are of no legal effect under Texas law, motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict for the same reason? If it's a legal question, why does it matter whether or not the jury answers the question, and in what way has the failure to object at that point in time caused any harm to your client?
Well, in the same term, I think you're right that it may not cause any harm to my client, but I don't think it causes any harm to his client either.
But why does it make a difference then whether there's an objection made or not if what we're asking is a trial court to make to answer a legal question?
Well, I think it gives the parties the opportunity, if they're going to say that we have to wait till the jury answers some fact question to determine whether the warranty arises as a matter of law, then they have to give the court the opportunity to find out, have we gathered all the evidence? Are all the facts on the record for the court to make that decision? And I think it's beneficial to have those issues decided at the trial court rather than lay behind the log and say, well, we'll just figure it out on appeal. It wastes the court's time. It wastes our time.
What other evidence that support the other issues that were submitted under DTPA?
I believe there is, and I think the Amarillo Court, in their opinion, did a good job of laying out those things that they felt like supported the other alternative submissions. In it. There are.
They seem to focus on the client.
Well, let me ask you this that would perhaps answer Justice Baker's question. You say in your briefing that RMH failed to turn off the pump. Is there evidence of that?
I think that the evidence on record is that that Rocky Mountain had this maintenance flight that was at the pump. There's no question that they refueled. That there's no evidence that anyone else touched the pump in the interim time between the first refueling and the second flight landing there.
So the evidence shows that Kitterman was the last person to use the fuel pump.
Correct.
Before the leak.
Correct. And the evidence is also that, from Kitterman's own testimony, to have the leak occur in this quantity, the pump would have to have been left on. And I think that what we're touching on here is I think one of the more important issues in this case, and that is that the DTPA question was submitted in broad form. What the petitioner in this case would have this court do is look at only the implied warranty issue as submitted and find that that invalidates the whole verdict.
Well, he said so many times. No evidence is given.
That's my question then. What is the evidence of false, misleading, or deceptive misrepresentation?
Well, as we outlined in our brief, there are other representations contained within the contract that were not kept with. The indemnity provision was not upheld. There were representations that they would provide persons who had the knowledge and skill required to perform the services, and there was evidence that Kitterman, who operated the pump, did not receive that training. That's his own testimony.
Was it right? You have a negligence cause of action and a DTPA cause of action, and that's it. No breach of contract. No fraud in the inducement.
Well, we don't have a breach of contract claim because the damages that resulted to the hospital were not directly as a result of the breach of the general agreement, and that was for Rocky Mountain to provide air ambulance services and all the incidentals that go with it. The damages that resulted to the University Medical Center was due to their failure to perform that contract in a reasonable manner such that it caused fuel to spill. So, you know, they incurred property damage as a result
of the
acts of them.
The cleanup and the property damages.
I'm sorry?
The damages were cleanup and related property damage.
Yes, sir. I mean, that was what the issue is, that we've got a TNRCC order that tells us that we need to remediate the site, and we have some cleanup.
So the basic pump. Allegation is he landed there, filled up his helicopter, and forgot to turn off the pump.
Yes, sir.
And that was the proximate cause of the leak, which caused your damage.
Right. Now, whether that...
How does any misrepresentation, allegedly in connection with the contract, fit into a DTPA claim?
Well, we get there through, in one respect, through the implied warranty of good and workmanlike performance that we believe attaches to this contract. We also have some additional, another aspect of our damages, of course, is that we're claiming that we are not liable for these damages due to the indemnity provision that they have failed to uphold in this case as well. And
but
that
you
is
just told me
you
didn't sue on the contract breach for failure to pay under the indemnity claim.
That's true.
So you can't argue that here then. You have to somehow fit all this into a DTPA claim.
Well, we get there by alleging that they represented the contract, they would uphold that into the bargain, which they didn't.
You're saying a breach of contract constitutes your DTPA claim?
Well, the failure to adhere to that particular provision, which required them to indemnify us for any property damage losses that we incurred as a result of the...
You're saying their breach of their contract is your DTPA claim?
One aspect of it is a breach of that particular provision in the contract, yes. Additionally, though, as I stated, there are some other representations that go along with that contract, including providing trained persons to perform the duties that they assumed under the contract.
More specifically in that regard, one claim you make for a DTPA violation is failure to abide by the indemnity agreement. Why didn't you just bring a cause of action for breach of the indemnity agreement?
I'd like to answer that question. I was not involved in the trial of this case, and I don't know the reason behind why that issue was not brought in breach of contract. I just can't tell you the reason behind that.
it's your position that every contract has an implied warranty within it?
Well, if we start with the Sharonbeck case that says that every contract carries with it a duty to perform the duties undertaken in that contract in a non-negligent manner, and look at the Colson case that says that there's no discernible difference between that duty to perform the duties under the contract in a non-negligent manner and the duty to perform in a good and workmanlike manner, then I would say yes, that duty arises in every contract.
And therefore translates into every breach of an implied warranty under contract is also a violation of DTPA.
Yes, as the DTPA existed at the time that this lawsuit was filed.
Another way in which you say that a DTPA violation occurred was because of improper training of personnel.
Correct.
And you say that RMH had a personnel manual requiring this training, and that they didn't comply with the requirements of their own manual. In your brief, however, you don't say that the existence of that manual, the existence of the training program, the training prerequisites established internally at RMH were ever communicated or represented to your client. In other words, regardless of whatever their own internal requirements may be, I don't see anything in your brief that establishes it as a violation of DTPA because there was no representation to your client about it.
Well, the representation was that they would provide personnel to operate and maintain the helicopters. Implied in that is that they were to provide people who were capable of doing that, not just to go hire someone off the street that didn't have the relevant base level of knowledge and expertise to perform those duties. And whether we get there through saying that their own internal procedures for hiring persons and training them, or we say that is just an implied duty under the contract, I think either way, I think we get there.
As a practical matter, what happened here is that 40% of the negligence was assigned to White's Pumps. What happened with regard to White's Pumps?
I believe they settled out before the litigation, before the trial.
Any other questions?
Oh, just as a footnote to this litigation, the companion case that I referenced in footnote 108 on page 37 has been decided by the Fifth Circuit adverse to the University Medical Center. So there is no insurance coverage out there to take care of the claim. I just wanted to clear that up with the court. And our time, I think, to file an application for cert is this Friday. Has been instructed not to do so. I guess the final thing that I would mention to the court is that Rocky Mountain has not contested the negligence issue on this appeal, that we're only talking about the warranty issues. So regardless of what happens with the warranty issue, I think we still have some verdict that stands, and I think what we get is a rendition back at least to the negligence verdict, if that's what the court so decides to do.
Didn't they challenge on the negligence in the Court of Appeals? The Court of Appeals didn't dispose of that aspect of it. Didn't they make some challenge to the jury finding on negligence in the Court of Appeals?
Even though
the judgment was based on the trial court, was based on the DTPA.
Right, in the Court of Appeals they did.
Right, and the Court of Appeals has not in fact reviewed that piece of the appeal yet, right?
I think what the Court of Appeals said in their opinion is that because we found there was some evidence to support the implied warranty breach, that was essentially the same as negligence, although I would argue that implied warranty puts a slightly higher standard because it's not of the reasonable and prudent person, but the reasonable and prudent service provider in that particular duty. But I think what they said is because they found that there was evidence to support the breach of the warranty, that also supported the breach, or the breach of the duty under simple negligence.
Well, did they dispose of all of the issues presented by Rocky Mountain challenging the negligence piece of the case?
I believe they did. I believe they've addressed every point that they brought. And on this petition, there's not any point seeking for this court to review the findings on simple negligence. In fact, one of their alternative remedies in this case is to have the judgment reduced by the comparative fault finding. And I would yield my time back to the court if you have any questions.
Any other questions? Thank you.
In fact, the Court of Appeals expressly stated that it was not ruling on the points of error relating to the negligence issue because it had found sufficient evidence on the implied warranty. It's page 9 of its first opinion in this case.
Does that mean then if you win every point you've raised here, it still goes back to the Court of Appeals to look at the negligence?
To look at the negligence. And one of the issues here, I think would be controlling on the Court of Appeals, and that is the need for the expert testimony on the implied warranty. I think the facts are the same.
Well, no, what about the negligence issue?
Right.
It goes back to look at the negligence thing.
Right.
Does it take expert testimony for a jury to determine whether somebody did or didn't turn off a pump?
Under the facts of this case, yes, it would. And that's what we cited in court to the Hager versus Arenas, which was a negligence case dealing with crop dusting, where they crop dusted really the wrong field. And the trial court it said no, there was no expert testimony required because it was within the common experience of people that dust the wrong field, that's negligence. And the Court of Appeals held no, that the intricacies of performing that act of piloting and crop dusting is not within the ordinary purview of lay people, and therefore there was expert testimony required. And this is not just really as simple as just whether or not he turned it off. The testimony was that he did turn it off. However, the testimony was also that sometimes it would appear to be turned off, but it would not actually go off, and that it could have been running at the time that he left it, and he could not tell because of the rotors, because they were doing a hot refueling. And 70% to 80% of the pumps in the industry have indicator lights to let you know whether it is really off or not, because sometimes it's difficult to tell. There are a number of facts in this case, and whether the training was adequate in this case was one of their allegations of negligence, and they were negligent in not training him properly. And I think that they require expert testimony whether this person, having 26 years of training, was actually trained to perform this work. But these are really questions I think that need to go back to the Court of Appeals.
With regard to the negligence claim, you didn't ask us to remand to the Court of Appeals, and that's not in your petition.
I don't recall if it's specifically, and if it's not, I would ask that as part of the further relief that I've requested and would like to be remanded to the Court of Appeals because they have not determined that issue. That would have been an error on my part if I could not ask the court to remand. Going back to the misrepresentations, the evidence of misrepresentations, it's laid out on page 8 and 9 of our brief in front of the Court of Appeals. The internal operations manual was promulgated. It was an internal document promulgated by Rocky Mountain Helicopters after the inception of the contract, and there is no evidence in the record that it was ever communicated to the hospital. This could not support any kind of misrepresentation of the DTPA, and we go through and we knock out all the misrepresentations. I think that some confusion has been created as to when duties arise or duties are implied by a contract, when warranties are implied. And whereas a person who contracts to perform a service has a duty to use reasonable care in providing that service, not every such contract creates an implied warranty. because if it did, we would have a DTPA violation for any time you had a negligence cause of action arising out of a contract. And I don't think that's where the court wants to go with this case. I don't think it's where the court should go with this case. The case I couldn't remember was Shell Oil Company versus Humphrey that held that there's no duty. No duty point may be raised by no evidence point. And I'll leave it to the rest of the court. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments for today, and all of these cases will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable.